diligent in your efforts to grow along the way, you will also be better equipped to fulfill that purpose, even if it requires you to make significant changes or course corrections. Many years ago, my friend Bob Buford wrote a book called The Second Half. It's fantastic. The entire book is a pause so that growth can catch up with you experience. In it, he encourages readers who experience some success in the first half of their lives to stop and think about what they want to do in the second half. Here is some of the advice he gives. You will not get very far in your second half without knowing your life mission. Can yours be stated in a sentence or two? A good way to begin formulating one is with some questions and nakedly honest answers. What is your passion? What have you achieved? What have you done uncommonly well? How are you wired? Where do you belong? What are the shoulds that have trailed you during the first half? These and other questions like them will direct you toward the self your heart longs for. They will help you discover the task for which you were especially made. Never forget that your goal in personal growth is reaching your potential. To do that, you need to keep pausing, keep asking questions, and keep growing every day. Applying the law of reflection to your life. Number one, have you created a place where you can consistently and effectively pause and reflect? If not, do so immediately. First, figure out what kind of environment will be good for you. Among the places I have chosen over the years are a rock outdoors, a small, isolated room where no one would bother me, and a special chair in my office. Figure out what works for you, and stick with it for as long as it's effective. Number two, schedule time to pause and reflect. If you don't, it will always get shuffled off of your to-do list. Ideally, you would spend a short time pausing to reflect at the end of every day, between 10 and 30 minutes, a significant time every week, at least an hour or two, part of a day several times a year, maybe a half a day, and an extended time annually, as little as a day, as much as a week. Put these times to pause on your calendar and guard them as you would your most important appointments. Number three, cartoonist Henry Arnold said, "The wise man questions himself, the fool others. The law of reflection will do you little good unless you are intentional in your thinking time. You make yourself intentional by asking yourself tough questions. Where do you most need to grow right now? Is it in self-management? Is there an issue that you can't seem to wrestle down? Are you experiencing a plateau in your career? Are you failing to win at the most important relationships in your life? Do you need to examine or re-examine your purpose? Do you need to assess what you should be doing in your second half? Whatever your issue is, create questions around it and spend time writing your answer to those questions during your scheduled times of reflection." Chapter 5, The Law of Consistency. Motivation gets you going. Discipline keeps you growing. Jim Tressel said, "The hallmark of excellence, the test of greatness, is consistency." When I started my speaking career, I believed that motivating people was the key to helping them succeed. If I can get them moving in the right direction, I thought, they will be successful. I would do my best to give people reasons to work hard. I'd try to make them laugh. I'd try to touch their hearts. My goal was to inspire people so much that they'd be ready to charge hell with a water pistol. When I was done, I'd walk away thinking I'd done a good job. But often, whatever motivation people received didn't seem to last very long. I'm still a big believer in motivation. Everyone wants to be encouraged. Everyone enjoys being inspired. But here's the truth when it comes to personal growth. Motivation gets you going, but discipline keeps you growing. That's the law of consistency. It doesn't matter how talented you are. It doesn't matter how many opportunities you received. If you want to grow, consistency is the key. How to grow in consistency. If you want to become more disciplined and consistent in your performance, you need to become more disciplined and consistent in your growth. How can you do that? By knowing the what, how, why, and when of personal improvement. Take some time to consider the following four questions about your growth. Number one, do you know what you need to improve? Journalist and author George Lorimer remarked, "You've got to get up every morning with determination if you're going to go to bed with satisfaction." That's true, but it's important to know where to direct that determination. I've already discussed this in some detail, but I think it bears repeating. You must develop yourself to be successful. All the time I see people with purpose who are inconsistent in their progress. They have the ambition to succeed, and they show aptitude for their job. Yet they do not move forward. Why? Because they think they can master their job and don't need to master themselves. What a mistake. Your future is dependent upon your personal growth. Improving yourself daily guarantees you a future filled with possibilities. When you expand yourself, you expand your horizons, your options, your opportunities, your potential. From the start of my career in 1969, if I had spent all my time perfecting my ability to do my job, I never would have grown. But because I focused on improving myself, I grew from taking care of people to leading them. I went from speaking to audiences to writing books. I expanded from influencing only small religious organizations to many different kinds of organizations. I improved my focus from institutional to entrepreneurial. My influence changed from local to national to international. I went from maintaining organizations to founding and growing them. Why has this happened to me? Because what I did was try to improve myself, not just my job or position. It opened up my future. It has allowed me to achieve much more than I ever believed I would be capable of doing. E.M. Gray said, "The successful person has the habit of doing the things that failures don't like to do. The successful person doesn't like doing them either, but his dislike is subordinated to the strength of his purpose. The more tuned in you are to your purpose, and the more dedicated you are to growing toward it, the better your chances of reaching your potential, expanding your possibilities, and doing something significant." Number two, do you know how you are supposed to improve? The question of how to improve is one of the main reasons I started to work hard at changing from being a motivational speaker to becoming a motivational teacher. I didn't want people to walk away from one of my teaching sessions inspired but uncertain how to proceed. To grow, most people need knowledge, experience, and coaching. Do you have a handle on how to improve yourself? I have four very simple suggestions that can get you started. Match your motivation to your personality type. Not everyone gets motivated the same way or is motivated by the same things. To give yourself a fighting chance to become consistent in your growth, start by leveraging your personality type to get yourself going. There are dozens of personality profiles and systems that people use. I like the one based on the classic personality types that has been taught by Florence Littauer. The first type of person is phlegmatic. The strength of people with this personality is that they are easygoing and likable. Their weakness is inertia. If you're phlegmatic, how can you motivate yourself? By finding the value in what you need to do. When phlegmatics see the value in doing something, they can be one of the most tenacious, meaning stubborn, of all personality types. At the opposite end of the personality spectrum from phlegmatics are cholerics. The strength of people with this personality type is that they take charge easily and make decisions quickly. Their weakness is that if they're not in charge, they refuse to participate. If you are choleric, how can you tap into internal motivation? By focusing on the choices you can make. Every person is in charge of his own growth. Choose how you will grow and stick with it. The most fun-loving of all the personality types are people who are sanguine. They are often the life of every party. Their weakness is often lack of focus. If you're sanguine, how can you motivate yourself to grow? By making a game of it. If that seems impossible, then give yourself rewards for incremental successes. The final personality type is melancholic. These are life's perfectionists. Attention to detail is their strength. But because they desire to do everything perfectly, they are afraid of making mistakes. If you are melancholic, how do you motivate yourself beyond this fear? By focusing on the joy of learning details and the potential for developing a level of mastery over your subject matter. As you can see, Every personality type has its strength. You just need to tap that strength in your personality to set yourself up for success when it comes to motivation. Start with the simple stuff. What is the number one mistake of first-time gardeners? The same as that of many people who approach personal growth for the first time. Attempting too much. What is the result? Discouragement. When you attempt too much too soon, you're almost guaranteed to fall short of your desired results. That is demotivating. The secret to building motivational momentum is to start small with the simple stuff. A humorous take on this thought was captured in the comic strip Peanuts by Charles Schulz. After striking out on the baseball field as usual, Charlie Brown returns to the dugout and slumps down on the bench. Rats, he laments. I'll never be a big league player. I just don't have it. All my life I've dreamed of playing in the big leagues, but I know I'll never make it. Lucy, ever one to give advice, replies, Charlie Brown, you're thinking too far ahead. What you need to do is set more immediate goals for yourself. Immediate goals, Charlie asks. Like many people, he has never considered such a thing. Yes, Lucy advises, start with the next inning. When you go out to pitch, see if you can walk out to the mound without falling down. Industrialist Ian McGregor observed, I work on the same principle as people who train horses. You start with low fences, easily achieve goals, and work up. It's important in management never to ask people to try to accomplish goals they can't accept. If you want to gain momentum and improve your motivation, begin by setting goals that are worthwhile but highly achievable. Master the basics. Then practice them every day without fail. Small disciplines repeated with consistency every day lead to great achievements gained slowly over time. This is an especially good idea to implement when reading a book. In fact, when I wrote 25 Ways to Win with People, I suggested that readers working on their people skills practice one of the 25 skills each week. It creates an easy way to make progress doing something simple day by day. If you want to grow, don't try to win big. Try to win small. Andrew Wood asserted, where many people go wrong in trying to reach their goals is in constantly looking for the big hit, the home run, the magic answer that suddenly transforms their dreams into reality. The problem is that the big hit never comes without a great deal of little hits first. Success in most things comes not out of some gigantic stroke of faith, but from simple incremental progress. Be patient. When I give the advice to be patient, I am the person who most needs to take it. As I mentioned in the last chapter, impatience is one of my greatest weaknesses. I think it comes from having unrealistic expectations for myself and others. Everything I want to do takes longer than I anticipate. Every endeavor I lead is more difficult than I believed it would be. Every project I attempt costs more than I expected. Every task I hand off to another person is more complicated than I had hoped. Some days, I believe that patience is a minor form of despair disguised as a virtue. I'm not alone in this. If you're an American, as I am, you may agree that as a culture, we have a problem with patience. We want everything fast. We live in a country with fast food restaurants and fast weight loss clinics. How ironic. Persian poet Saadi instructed, have patience. All things are difficult before they become easy. That's wise advice. Most people never realize how close they are to achieving significant things because they give up too soon. Everything worthwhile in life takes dedication and time. The people who grow and achieve the most are the ones who harness the power of patience and persistence. Value the process. One of the best things you can do for yourself as a learner is to cultivate the ability to value and enjoy the process of growth. It is going to take a long time, so you might as well enjoy the journey. Several years ago, I was having dinner with my friends, Vern and Charlene Armitage. Charlene is a successful life coach who works with many clients. I asked what she focused on when coaching. Her answer highlighted the importance of the process that people must develop in order to grow and change the direction of their lives. She said, life goals are reached by setting annual goals. Annual goals are reached by reaching daily goals. Daily goals are reached by doing things which may be uncomfortable at first, but eventually become habits. Habits are powerful things. Habits turn actions into attitudes and attitudes into lifestyles. You can visualize tomorrow using it as motivation to grow, but if you want to actually grow, your focus needs to be on today. If you value today and find a way to enjoy it, you will invest in today. And the small steps you take today will lead to the bigger steps you take someday. In their book, Winning the Answers, Jack and Susie Welch assert, too many people believe that one big public success will solve their self-confidence problems forever. That only happens in the movies. In real life, the opposite strategy is what works. Call it the small victories approach. They go on to describe Jack's first experience as a speaker. Even with detailed notes and lots of practice, the 15-minute effort was a disaster. So he made it his goal to improve incrementally, which he accomplished by valuing the process. Instead of letting fear or failures overwhelm him, he stared defeat in the face, figured out what went wrong, set a new goal, and started again. They explain, in time you will discover that all failing really does teach you something you needed to know, so you can regroup and stretch again with ever more nerve. That strategy has paid off. Today, they write, answering questions without notes in front of thousands of people is the opposite of nerve-wracking. It's fun. That kind of progress cannot happen if you don't value the process. Number 3. Do you know why you want to keep improving? Knowing what to improve and how to improve are critical to consistency and personal growth. But so is knowing why. The how and the what will take you only so far. The why is what keeps you motivated long after that first rush of energy and enthusiasm wears off. It can carry you through when willpower isn't enough. Think of it as why power. I love the story of the salesman who looked out the window of a hotel restaurant at a blinding snowstorm. He asked his waiter, "Do you think the roads will be clear enough in the morning to travel?" The waiter replied, "Depends on if you're on salary or commission." Having a strong why will help you keep going when the discipline of learning becomes difficult, discouraging, or tedious. If your growth is connected to your values, dreams, and purpose, you'll know why you're doing it, and you will be more likely to follow through. One of the ways to judge whether you have tapped into your whys is to take what my friend Mike Murdoch calls the why test. Your answers to the following 7 questions will let you know if your why is solid enough to motivate you to consistently grow. Question 1. Do you constantly procrastinate on important tasks? Question 2. Do you require coaxing to do small chores? Question 3. Do you perform duties just to get by? Question 4. Do you constantly talk negatively about your work? Question 5. Do efforts of friends to encourage you irritate you instead? Question 6. Do you start small projects and abandon them? Question 7. Do you avoid self-improvement opportunities? If you answer yes to many of those questions, you haven't tapped into a strong enough or big enough why to keep you growing. When I was a child, my mom continually gave me whys to keep me going. She would say things like, "If you eat your vegetables, you can have dessert." She knew I needed to know the benefits of eating vegetables when I didn't want to do it. That kind of training set me up for success because I started to learn the relationship between motivation and discipline. If you think about it, you can see that discipline and motivation are two sides of the same coin. If you have the motivation you need, discipline is no problem. If you lack motivation, discipline is always a problem. You have to give yourself more and bigger whys so you can keep wanting to put in the effort to grow. In my book, Put Your Dream to the Test, I teach that the more valid reasons you have to achieve your dream, the higher the odds are that you will. That principle is also true of growth. The greater number of reasons you give yourself to grow, the more likely you will be to follow through. Of course, in certain circumstances, one really compelling why can also be enough. As Kenyan world-class runner Bernard Kiplagat demonstrated when he was interviewed during the Sydney Olympics. He was asked how his country was able to produce so many great distance runners. His answer, "It's the road signs. Beware of lions." Legendary NFL coach Vince Lombardi said, "Once you learn to quit, it becomes a habit. If giving up has become a habit for you, then I suggest you take the advice of my friend Darren Hardy, who wrote a wonderful book called The Compound Effect. In it he writes, "The compound effect is the principle of reaping huge rewards from a series of small, smart choices. What's most interesting about this process to me is that even though the results are massive, the steps in the moment don't feel significant. Whether you're using this strategy for improving your health, relationships, finances, or anything else for that matter, the changes are so subtle, they're almost imperceptible. These small changes offer little or no immediate result, no big win, no obvious I told you so payoff. So why bother? Most people get tripped up by the simplicity of the compound effect. For instance, they quit after the 8th day of running because they're still overweight. Or they stop practicing the piano after 6 months because they haven't mastered anything other than chopsticks. Or they stop making contributions to their IRA after a few years because they could use the cash, and it doesn't seem to be adding up too much anyway. What they don't realize is that these small, seemingly insignificant steps, completed consistently over time, will create a radical difference. When you make the right choices, however small, and do it consistently over time, it can make a huge difference in your life. If you can remember why you're making these choices, it becomes easier. Number 4. Do you know when you are supposed to improve? The final piece of the puzzle is the question of when. When do you need to improve? First, the obvious answer, right now, today. Author and education professor Leo Buscaglia noted, "Life lived for tomorrow will always be just a day away from being realized, so you need to get started if you haven't yet. More important, you need today to be every day. You will never change your life until you change something you do daily. That means developing great habits. Discipline is the bridge between goals and accomplishments. That bridge must be crossed every day. Over time, that daily crossing becomes a habit. And ultimately, people do not decide their future. They decide their habits, and their habits decide their future." As author and speaker Brian Tracy says, "From the time you get up in the morning to the time you go to sleep at night, your habits largely control the words you say, the things you do, and the ways you react and respond. What are you doing daily that needs to change? What needs doing? Maybe more important, what needs undoing?" Advice columnist Abigail Van Buren quipped, "A bad habit never goes away by itself. It's always an undo-it-yourself project. What are you willing to change doing today in order to change what you will be doing tomorrow?" In the end, hard work is really the accumulation of easy things you didn't do when you should have. It's like diet and exercise. Everyone wants to be thin, but no one wants to make the right choices to get there. It's hard work when you've neither eaten right nor exercised day after day. However, if you make small right choices each day, day after day, you see results. Maybe it's time to stop setting goals. Consistency isn't easy. Novelist Aldous Huxley asserted, "Consistency is contrary to nature, contrary to life. The only completely consistent people are the dead." Even so, to be successful, we must learn to become consistent. You must figure out what works for you, but I'll be glad to tell you what has worked for me. Instead of being goal conscious, I focus on being growth conscious. Here's the difference. If you're goal conscious, you focus on the destination, whereas if you're growth conscious, you focus on the journey. Goal consciousness motivates you and others. Growth consciousness matures you and others. If you're focused on goals, you are seasonal, whereas if you're focused on growth, you're lifelong. Goal consciousness challenges you, where growth consciousness changes you. Those people who are goal conscious, they stop when a goal is reached. Those that are growth conscious, they keep growing beyond their goal. I am such a strong believer in people and in human potential, not only in others, but also myself, that I don't ever want to put a lid on it by setting goals that are too small. I did that early in my career, and I realized it would limit me. If you can believe in yourself and the potential that is in you, and then focus on growth instead of goals, there's no telling how far you can grow. You just need to consistently put in the work as you keep believing in yourself. Consistently productive. Author Ernest Newman noted, "The great composer does not set to work because he is inspired, but becomes inspired because he is working." Beethoven, Wagner, Mozart, and Bach all settled down day after day to the job at hand. They didn't waste time waiting for inspiration. That has also been true of one of today's most famous and productive composers, John Williams. No doubt you know the man's work, even if you don't know his name. Do you remember the five musical notes that were the communication key in the movie Close Encounters of the Third Kind? Or the ominous music that always accompanied the appearance of the shark in Jaws? How about the themes from Star Wars or Raiders of the Lost Ark or the Harry Potter films? All of these were John Williams' compositions. Williams, the son of a jazz musician, was born in Queens, New York, and grew up in Los Angeles. He showed musical promise early and studied with an Italian composer. After a stint serving in the U.S. Air Force, he studied piano at Juilliard, then played at clubs and studios in New York City. He broke into the movie industry by working for composers such as Franz Waxman, Bernard Herrmann, Alfred Newman, Henry Mancini, and Jerry Goldsmith, playing piano, scoring, and eventually composing. His first screen credit came in 1960. Williams has been working steadily in the movies for more than 60 years. In that time, he has written 121 film scores, a symphony, a dozen concertos, and many other symphonic works. He has been nominated for Academy Awards 45 times, winning 5 times. He's been awarded 4 Golden Globes, 5 Emmys, and 21 Grammys, and he's still going strong. How does he do it? By being consistent. Williams says, "I developed from very early on a habit of writing something every day, good or bad. There are good days and there are less good days, but I do a certain amount of pages, it seems to me, before I can feel like the day has been completely served. When I'm working on a film, of course, it's a 6-day-a-week affair, and when I'm not working on films, I always like to devote myself to some piece, some musical project, that gives me a feeling that I may be contributing in some small way, or, maybe more importantly, learning in the process." Williams doesn't look for motivation. He doesn't wait for inspiration. He gets up every morning and practices the discipline of writing. He doesn't expect it to be perfect. He just expects it to be done. And what about writer's block? Williams says, "It's not a problem. I never experienced anything like a block. For me, if I'm ever blocked, or I feel like I don't know where to go on the next turn, the best thing for me is to keep writing, to write something. It could be absolute nonsense, but it will project me into the next phase of thinking. And I think if we ourselves as writers get out of the way and let the flow happen, and not get uptight about it, so to speak, the muses will carry us along." The wonderful thing about music is it never seems to be exhausted. Every little idea germinates another one. Things are constantly transforming themselves in musical terms, so that the few notes we have, 7, 8, or 12 notes, can be morphed into endless variations, and it's never quite over. So I think the idea of a block is something we need to work through. John Williams' life and work is proof that the law of consistency can work. Anyone who does what he must only when he is in the mood or when it's convenient isn't going to be successful. The secret is following through. Williams' body of work is the evidence of a lifetime of self-discipline and perseverance. And it verifies what the founder of SuccessNet says. If you develop the habits of success, you'll make success a habit. That habit of success hasn't gone to Williams' head. If the music is well known, he says, it speaks to the ubiquitous nature of film in our society. With time, I suppose, everything all but the greatest works of art are erased from memory. But I feel lucky and very privileged that people respond in the way that they do. I find John Williams's music and his life very inspiring. I hope you do too. But never forget, motivation gets you going, but discipline keeps you growing. That is the law of consistency. Applying the law of consistency to your life. Number one, align your methods of motivation with your personality type. Use whatever personality profile you prefer to study your personality type. If you haven't used one before, then find one. Examples include Myers-Briggs Type Indicator, DISC, and Personality Plus. Once you have a good handle on what makes your personality type tick, then develop a daily growth system that is simple and plays to your strengths. Number two, it's difficult to remain engaged in anything if you have not found a way to value and appreciate the process. Make a list of everything you like about personal growth. If your list is very short, really work at it. Anything you can find as motivation will help you to develop better growth habits. Number three, the more whys you have for pursuing personal growth on a daily basis, the more likely you will be to follow through. Start compiling those whys. Think of immediate benefits as well as long-term ones. Consider reasons related to purpose, vision, and dreams. Think of how it will help you relationally, vocationally, and spiritually. Any reason to grow is a good reason as long as it's your reason. Chapter 6, The Law of Environment. Growth thrives in conducive surroundings. Mark Cain said, "The first step toward success is taken when you refuse to be a captive of the environment you first find yourself in." I believe at some point during every person's lifetime, there comes a need to change environments in order to grow. That may seem obvious in the case of someone like Jeanetta McSwain, whom I told you about in the Law of the Mirror chapter. She grew up in a terrible situation and suffered horrible abuse. But I also believe it's true even for people who grew up in positive, nurturing environments. If we want to grow to reach our potential, we must be in the right environment. That usually requires us to make changes in our life. Time for a change. I grew up in a great home environment. I had two loving parents. My father led our family proactively, helping each of us three kids find our purpose and develop our talents. My mother loved us unconditionally, and believe me, there were days when I know I was a challenge because I didn't like rules and was always pushing the boundaries. I had a lot of friends. I received a good education. I headed off to a career I loved after marrying my high school sweetheart. What could be better? But less than 10 years into my career, I realized that the environment I was in wasn't conducive to reaching my full potential. In my late 20s, I was already being considered to lead the premier church in the denomination. I wanted to learn a lot more, and by their grooming me for that position so early in my career, I felt like they were saying that I was at the top of the class. What's the problem with that? If you're always at the head of the class, then you're in the wrong class. The best place to learn is always where others are ahead of you. Just to set the record straight, so you don't think I'm bragging, I need to tell you that I was a medium-sized fish in a very small pond. I wasn't as good as they were giving me credit for. The people in my denomination were good people. I admired the character and integrity of many of their leaders, so that wasn't the problem. I just knew I needed more room to grow. To do that, I would have to change environments. I went to my father, a lifelong pastor in that organization, who had been a college president and an executive in the denomination's leadership, and talked with him about the issue. He agreed that I needed to move on to a larger pond so that I could grow more easily. That took understanding and courage on his part, because after I left, he would remain in the organization and would endure a lot of criticism from others in the organization for my move. But he did it with grace, and he always supported my decision. And I feel certain that had I remained where I was, I would not have grown the way I have, nor would I have come as far. Change depends on your choices. You've probably heard the phrase, growth equals change. It's possible to change without growing, but it's impossible to grow without changing. One of the keys to making the right changes that allow us to grow is knowing the difference between a problem or a challenge, which I can change, and a fact of life, which I cannot. For example, one day as a teenager, I looked into the mirror and I came to the sudden realization that I was not a handsome guy. It was a fact of life. I couldn't change my face. What was I going to do? I made a decision. I would change my attitude about it. I would smile. Did it change my face? No, not really, but it helped me look a lot better. Like me, you must deal with many facts of life. You cannot change where and when you were born. You cannot change who your parents are. You cannot change your height or your DNA, but you can change your attitude about them. You must do your best to live with them. A problem is different. A problem is something you can do something about. It's something you can grow through. How? Ironically, it begins with a similar first step, a change in attitude. When you change your attitude regarding a problem, you open up many opportunities for growth. Businessman, author, and speaker Nito Queben asserted, "Whether you are a success or a failure in life has little to do with your circumstances. It has much more to do with your choices. What choices do you need to make so that you are in conducive surroundings where you will thrive and grow? When it comes to environment, I believe we need to make the following six choices to put ourselves in a better place for growth. Number one, assess your current environment. Professor and preacher Ernest Campbell tells a story about a lonely woman who purchased a parrot from a pet store. After only one day of having it, she returned to the store and told the storekeeper how disappointed she was with it. "That parrot hasn't said a word yet," she lamented. "Does it have a mirror?" asked the storekeeper. "Parrots like to be able to look at themselves in the mirror." So the lady bought a mirror and returned home. The next day she was back again reporting that the bird still wasn't speaking. "What about a ladder?" the storekeeper asked. Parrots enjoy walking up and down a ladder, so the parrot owner bought a ladder and returned home. On the third day she was back again with the same complaint. "Does the parrot have a swing?" was the shopkeeper's solution. "Birds enjoy relaxing on a swing." So she bought the swing and she went home. The next day she returned to the store and announced that the bird had died. "Terribly sorry to hear that," the storekeeper said. "Did the bird ever say anything before it died?" "Yes," said the lady. "It said, 'Don't they sell any food down there?'" What's the moral of this silly story? Change just for the sake of change is not going to help you. If you're going to make changes, you must make sure that they are the right ones. How do you do that? Start by assessing where you are now and why you want to change. When I was considering making the transition from one professional environment to another, I spent a good amount of time examining why I wanted to change. For me, there were three main reasons to make the transition. One, I had gone to the top too fast. Two, I did not feel challenged enough. And finally, three, there was nowhere else I wanted to go in the organization. Those factors were enough to make me look at the uncomfortable truth of needing to make changes to where I was and what I was doing. One of the ways to judge whether you're growing and in a conducive growth environment is to discern whether you're looking forward to what you're doing or looking back at what you've done. If the future looks dull, routine, or confining, you may need to start looking to make changes. Like me, you may be able to intuitively sense if you are not in the kind of environment that is going to promote your growth. However, if you find it difficult to make that judgment about your situation, then you can approach it from another direction. You can ask yourself questions to help you understand who and what nurtures you personally, and then figure out whether or not you're getting those things. Here's a list of questions to help you get started. Music. What songs lift me? Thoughts. What ideas speak to me? Experiences. What experiences rejuvenate me? Friends. What people encourage me? Recreation. What activities revive me? Soul. What spiritual exercises strengthen me? Hopes. What dreams inspire me? Home. What family members care for me? Giftedness. What blessings activate me? Memories. What recollections make me smile? Books. What have I read that changed me? You get the idea. I'm sure you will be able to add other categories and questions to help you understand what encourages you to grow. The main idea is to know yourself and to assess whether you're getting what you need in your current environment. If you are, celebrate. If you're not, prepare yourself to make some hard choices. Number two, change yourself and your environment. If you know that you need to make a major change to your environment, then there's something you must keep in mind. You must also determine to change yourself at the same time. Here's why. If you try to change yourself, but not your environment, growth will be slow and difficult. If you try to change your environment, but not yourself, growth will be slow and less difficult. Change your environment and yourself, growth will be faster and more successful. By putting both together at the same time, you increase and accelerate your chances for success. When I first realized I needed to grow after the encounter with Kurt Campmeyer that I recounted in The Law of Intentionality, I found it difficult to actually do. Few people shared my enthusiasm for growth. I had few models. Most of the people around me in my little world were content to work hard and merely make a living. I wanted more than that. I wanted to make an impact. During that time, I remember sitting down and thinking about what a growth environment would look like. Over the course of many weeks, I penned what I called my growth environment. It has helped me to guide my decision-making concerning personal growth since I wrote it in 1973. It says, "In a growth environment, others are ahead of me. I am continually challenged. My focus is forward. The atmosphere is affirming. I am often out of my comfort zone. I wake up excited. Failure is not my enemy. Others are growing. People desire change. Growth is modeled and expected." When my intuition was telling me that my environment wasn't conducive to personal growth, I went back to that list and found that most of those statements did not apply to my current situation. So I determined to change myself and change my environment. If you heard that list and you sensed that most of those statements did not apply to your life, then you may need to do the same thing. I learned a lot about changing myself in 1975 when I attended a conference in Waterloo, Iowa. At that conference, I saw Charles Tremendous Jones for the first time. It was there that I also met an author whose books I admired, Elmer Towns. I was surprised but delighted when he invited me to sit next to him on a flight to Chicago on the way home so we could talk. During our conversation, he taught me the hot poker principle. "Do you know how to get a poker hot?" Elmer asked me. "Put it next to the fire." He went on to explain that we're like the metal in a poker. If our environment is cold, we're cold. If it's hot, we're hot. If you want to grow, he said, then spend time with great people. Visit great places. Attend great events. Read great books. Listen to great tapes. Those words sent me on my quest to meet with leaders around the country who were ahead of me professionally. It changed my life. As you consider changing yourself and your environment, think about the elements that the right kind of growth environment provide. The right soil to grow in other words, what nourishes me, this will bring me growth. The right air to breathe in, what keeps me alive, this is my purpose. The right climate to live in other words, what sustains me, that's the people around me. They say that if you put a pumpkin in a jug, when it's the size of a walnut, it will grow to the size and shape of the jug and never get bigger. That can happen to a person's thinking. Don't allow that to happen to you. Number 3, change who you spend your time with. Early in my life, I learned the importance of a right environment and who I spent my time with. My parents were very wise in this area. Though my parents never had a lot of money, when we were growing up, they created the kind of home environment where all of my friends wanted to come and spend time. My dad made a basketball court by pouring a concrete pad and putting up a basketball hoop. They fitted out our basement as a kid's paradise, complete with a pool table, ping pong table, and a chemistry set. We had few reasons to hang out anywhere but home, and our friends had every reason to come over. And my mother was always around, getting to know all the kids. She influenced all the friends she could and warned us about the behavior of those who might lead us into trouble. She and my dad understood that birds of a feather flock together, and their efforts paid off. Kids flowed to our house. Even today, more than 5 decades later, whenever I see any of the people I grew up with, they still talk about coming over to my house as a kid and hanging out in our basement canteen. It was a destination. According to research by social psychologist Dr. David McClellan of Harvard, the people with whom you habitually associate are called your reference group, and these people determine as much as 95% of your success or failure in life. Many people have given their take on this truth. King Solomon of Israel wrote, "Walk with the wise and become wise, for a companion of fools suffers harm." Charles Tremendous Jones is well known for saying, "You are the same today that you're going to be in 5 years from now, except for two things, the people with whom you associate with and the books that you read." And Jim Rohn asserted that we become the combined average of the five people we hang around the most. Rohn would say we could tell the quality of our health, attitude, and income by looking at the people around us. He believed that we start to eat what they eat, talk like they talk, read what they read, think like they think, watch what they watch, and dress like they dress. I like the way Sue Inquist sees the issue. Inquist has been called the John Wooden of women's softball. She played for UCLA from 1975 to 1978, returned in 1980 as an assistant coach, and then served as head coach from 1989 to 2006. As a player and coach, she helped win a total of 11 NCAA softball titles. She retired with a career coaching record of 887 wins, 175 losses, and one tie, an .835 winning percentage that puts her among the top five NCAA coaches of all time. Inquist has espoused the 33% rule. She says, "You can divide people in school, on your team, at work, or anywhere else into the bottom, middle, and top thirds, and they always have the same characteristics. The bottom third suck the life out of you because nothing is ever good enough for them. They take energy and motivation out of an environment. The middle third are happy and positive when things are going well, but down in times of adversity. Circumstances dictate their attitude. The top third maintains a positive attitude even in tough times. They are leaders, influencers, and game changers. Those are the kind of people we should try to be, and those are the kind of people we should spend our time with. It's not always comfortable, but it's always profitable to associate with people larger than ourselves. As the Italian proverb says, keep company with good men, and you will increase their number." What kinds of larger people should we spend our time with? People with integrity. People who are positive. People who are ahead of us professionally. People who lift us up instead of knocking us down. People who take the high road, never the low. And above all, people who are growing. They should be like Ralph Waldo Emerson and Henry David Thoreau, whose question for each other whenever they met was, "What have you learned since we last met?" I highly recommend that you also find an accountability partner to take the growth journey with you. That person will help you to stick with your right decisions and help you avoid making wrong ones. A good accountability partner should love you unconditionally, desire your success, be mature, ask you agreed-upon questions, help you when you need help. You cannot take the growth journey alone, not if you want to reach your potential. The most significant factor in any person's environment is the people. If you change nothing else in your life for the better than that, you will have increased your chances of success tenfold. So think long and hard about who you're spending the most time with, for wherever they are headed, so are you. Number 4. Challenge yourself in your new environment. I once heard a story about a Japanese artist who painted a picture on a large canvas. Down in one corner was a tree, and on the limbs of the tree were some birds. The rest of the canvas was bare. When he was asked if he was going to paint something more to fill the rest of the canvas, he said, "Oh, no. I have to leave room for the birds to fly." One of the most positive things about being in a growth environment is that it gives you room to fly. But you must be intentional about finding and creating those growth opportunities. You must develop the habit and discipline of challenging yourself. One of the first ways that I challenged myself was by making my goals public. Few things push a person like a deadline and an audience. That didn't mean that I always reached my goals, but I found that if I told others about what I intended to do, I worked harder, and I worked in such a way that I wouldn't be ashamed of my efforts even if everyone was watching them. Another way I challenged myself, both when I started and still today, is to look for one major growth opportunity every week, follow through on it, and learn from it. Whether it's meeting with friends, a learning lunch with a mentor, a conference I'm attending, or a speaking event where I might get time with high-profile leaders, I always prepare the same way, by asking 5 questions before the learning time. I ask, what are their strengths? This is where I'll learn the most. What are they learning now? This is how I'll catch their passion. What do I need right now? This helps me to apply what I learned to my situation. Who have they met, what have they read, or what have they done that has helped them? This helps me to find additional growth opportunities. What haven't I asked that I should have? This enables them to point out changes I need to make from their perspective. A better growth environment won't help you much if you don't do everything in your power to make the most of it. It's like an entrepreneur being given money for new opportunities and never using it. You must seize the growth opportunities you have and make the most of them by challenging yourself. Number 5, focus on the moment. The changes we want to make in our lives come only in the present. What we do now controls who we become and where we are in the future. We live and work in the present. As Harvey Firestone Jr. said, "Today is when everything that's going to happen from now on begins." If you need to make changes in yourself and your environment, don't worry about your past. I read that former movie star and diplomat Shirley Temple Black learned about the power of living in the moment from her mother-in-law. Evidently, when her husband Charles was a boy, he asked his mother, "What was the happiest moment of your life?" "This moment right now," she responded. "But what about all the other happy moments in your life?" "What about when you were married?" he asked. She laughed and said, "My happiest moment then was then. My happiest moment now is now." You can only really live in the moment you're in. So to me, that's always the happiest moment. Mother Teresa observed, "Yesterday is gone. Tomorrow has not yet come. We have only today. Let us begin." If you need to make changes in yourself and your environment, don't dwell on your past. You can't change it. Don't worry about your future. You can't control it. Focus on the current moment and what you can do now. Number 6. Move forward despite criticism. In his classic, The Science of Getting Rich, author Wallace D. Wattles writes, "Do not wait for a change of environment before you act. Cause a change of environment through action. You can act upon your present environment so as to cause yourself to be transferred to a better environment." Growth always comes from taking action, and taking action almost always brings criticism. Move forward anyway. To reach your potential, you must do not only what others believe you cannot do, but what even you believe you cannot do. Most people underestimate themselves. They shoot for what they know they can reach. Instead, they should reach for what's beyond their grasp. If you don't try to create the future you want, you must endure the future you get. As you take action to change yourself and your environment, you will almost certainly be criticized for it. Poet Ralph Waldo Emerson observed, "Whatever course you decide upon, there's always someone to tell you that you are wrong. There are always difficulties arising which tempt you to believe that your critics are right. To map out a plan of action and follow it to the end requires some of the same courage which a soldier needs. Peace has its victories, but it takes brave men to win them." When I was sensing that I needed to change environments in my career, the organization offered me the best position they had. It was a very generous thing for them to do, but I knew with great certainty that I had to make a transition and go in a different direction. So I declined their offer. Unfortunately, they felt rejected, and they criticized my decision. That's okay. As Speaker Les Brown says, "Someone's opinion of you does not have to become your reality." Their words hurt, but they didn't make me question my decision. Albert F. Joffrey asserts, "When you take charge of your life, there is no longer need to ask permission of other people or society at large. When you ask permission, you give someone veto power over your life. Before making a major change, seek wise counsel if you can, but make your own decisions. You are ultimately accountable for the choices you make in your life." A note for leaders. As I grew in my career and began leading larger organizations, my growth challenge began to change. The need for me to grow has always been there, and the need to find people who teach me never changed. However, as the leader of an organization, I came to recognize that it was my responsibility to create a positive growth environment for others. I did that by using the same list I created for myself in 1973 and applying it to help others. I strove to create a place where others are ahead of them. They are continually challenged. Their focus is forward. The atmosphere is affirming. They are often out of their comfort zone. They wake up excited. Failure is not their enemy. Others are growing. People desire change. Growth is modeled and expected. As the leader, it was my responsibility to take the initiative and create such an environment. It was hard work, but the effort was always worth it. Many people blossomed, grew, and became leaders as a result. When leaders match people to roles in their organization, it's not enough for them to weigh what people have done in the past. They must also consider what people could do if the environment allowed them to flourish. Likewise, it's a good idea to help people understand what will be missing for them when they leave a growth environment. I always try to do that during exit interviews with people as they moved on from any of my organizations. I would tell them, "You are leaving an environment where growth is a priority and people are encouraged and expected to develop. If you don't go to a similar environment, you can't expect the same results, and you'll have to work extra hard to keep growing." Some understood and met the challenges ahead of them. Others saw only what they hoped would be greener pastures and didn't understand the importance of a good environment until they hit walls they never experienced before. Never forget the law of environment. Growth thrives in conducive surroundings. If you are in a positive growth environment, be grateful. Thank the people who helped you to create it and reward them by striving to reach your potential. If you're not, do what you must to change your environment and yourself. And if you are a leader, do everything in your power to grow yourself and create the right environment in which others can grow. It will be the best investment you ever made as a leader. Applying the law of environment to your life. Number one, assess your current environment when it comes to growth by answering true or false to each of the following 10 statements. Others are ahead of me. I am continually challenged. My focus is forward. The atmosphere is affirming. I am often out of my comfort zone. I wake up excited. Failure is not my enemy. Others are growing. People desire change. Growth is modeled and expected. If you answer false to more than 5 of the statements, your current environment may be hampering your growth. You will need to determine whether you need to change or improve your environment in order to reach your potential. Number 2, assess your personal growth needs in the 3 main areas mentioned in this chapter. The right soil to grow in. What nourishes me? That's your growth. Use the following list from the chapter or create your own to assess what nurtures you. Music, what songs lift me? Thoughts, what ideas speak to me? Experiences, what experiences rejuvenate me? Friends, what people encourage me? Recreation, what activities revive me? Soul, what spiritual exercises strengthen me? Hopes, what dreams inspire me? Home, what family members care for me? Giftedness, what blessings activate me? Memories, what recollections make me smile? Books, what have I read that changed me? The right air to breathe in. What keeps me alive? That's my purpose. Review your answers to the questions at the end of the Law of Awareness and the Law of Consistency chapters. Use them to develop a purpose statement for your life. Don't expect it to be perfect or permanent. It will probably continue